The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It is Thursday, July 9th, and you might also be listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge, watching us on the PCTV Select app on your favorite device, or watching the cable channel 1301 Access Pittsfield. We appreciate it if you're along for the ride this morning. And Howard Herman is my guest here this morning, sports reporter for the Berkshire Eagle. Should I say Hall of Fame sports reporter for the Berkshire Eagle?
You can say that.
I can.
It's like the great line, and I'm paraphrasing because I've seen it multiple ways, that the great Groucho Marx once said, I wouldn't want to join a club that would have me as a member.
So we'll talk to Howard Herman about that and other things here, sports-related, this morning. It's a great honor, so we will definitely talk about that. The World Cup and baseball and all kinds of good stuff coming up with our discussion with Howard in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what the National Weather Service has in store for us today. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the lower 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny. Hot with highs in the upper 80s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers in the evening. Humid with lows in the lower 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it. It's going to be nice today for a change. Actually, yesterday was pretty nice, too, now that I think of it.
Actually, yesterday was like the nicest day of the summer.
It sure was, right? Top 10 day.
It wasn't too hot. It was not, you know, it was nice enough. It was hot enough, but not too hot.
Yeah, I agree.
Humid at all.
Yeah, we get some of those days here. It does happen. We have to dodge through some of the other ones, like the ridiculous heat wave that we had right before the 4th of July, which it is summer, but still, that was pretty tough to get through. And then, some of the rain, but it all evens out.
You know, we've had this conversation here many times over the years.
Because we always have the weather first before we talk.
But it's like, as long as, you know, if it does what it's supposed to do when it's supposed to do it, I can handle it. Like, I wasn't particularly crazed over that real heat wave. It is summer.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be hot.
No doubt.
If it wants to be like 10 below zero or snow a foot in January, it's January.
Yeah. Well, people still have to take precautions, right?
They do. I don't want 90 degrees on Memorial Day. I don't want a foot of snow on Thanksgiving.
Right.
If everything happens when it's supposed to happen, you know, according to the calendar, I can survive
it. Tolerate it.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you live in the Berkshires and you live in Massachusetts in general, you do have to have a thick skin for things like that, right? I mean, it just is what it is.
Yeah.
It gets hot and then it gets cold.
Yeah, it gets hot, but it doesn't get hot that long. This isn't Delaware in the summertime.
Right.
Or North Georgia, where it's 90 degrees every day and the relative humidity is like 75%.
I'd say enjoy it while you can, right? We have to do that.
You got it. You know
pretty soon it's going to be, the cold stuff's going to be going in and we're going to be wistful for the days of summer, especially a morning like today. Look out there and boy, just the sun's popping and got blue skies. Just so nice.
Yeah, and I think I'm just going to bring a couch in here and just spend the rest of the day.
I think the place could use a couch. Yeah. A nice coffee maker, maybe. I don't know.
We can do that.
So congratulations on the honor. Western Mass Sports Hall of Fame, is that correct?
Baseball
Hall of Fame, sorry. Got that right. And tell us about going to the ceremony, being inducted. What was that like?
It was a banquet at the Wyckoff Country Club in Holyoke. I was inducted with, I actually get what's called the Gary Brown Award. Hmm. And for those who don't remember, Gary Brown was a legendary sports writer and sports columnist with the Springfield Union News and the Springfield Republican. And I guess just the Springfield Union before it became the Springfield Union News. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it just kept sucking up all the papers there. Mm-hmm. And the award, and I was the second writer to get it. Ron Chmielewski, who writes for the Republican, got it 2 years ago. He was the first one. Hmm. And last year they gave it to former WWLP sports anchor Rich Tedemer.
Right. And he was there at the ceremony.
He's the master of ceremonies, yeah. And now retired from his job as news anchor. Because he went, because Channel 22 in its infinite wisdom elected to drop sports. From its newscast, and they made him the morning anchor, and he was that for about a decade, and then said, you know, I've got getting up at 4 a.m. is enough, and and now he's off playing golf every day.
That's an interesting choice, dropping your sports from your newscast to kind of a bread and butter kind of thing, right? News, weather,
it is
sports.
And it isn't. You know, nobody in neither of the broadcast entities in Springfield have a designated sports anchor and designated sports time on their newscasts.
Interesting.
Channel 22 hasn't needed it because, as we have often joked about Channel 22, they could run a test pattern and still be the number one station in the Springfield market because they have always dominated, you know, the Nielsen ratings there. Where we have these conversations at the banquet about that, when you look at what the Albany market does, which is a larger market, they have multiple sports anchors,
right,
and designated multiple 3 or 4 minutes a night on their late news of sports.
Absolutely.
So
it's a very big chunk of their news there.
It's a really interesting dichotomy and different because I see a lot. There are markets where, you know, news stations don't do sports anymore because, you know, it's basically just it's basically just national highlights.
Yeah.
And I tell people, and I say, no. It, you know, depending on where you are, you know, Albany is as much about what goes on in their colleges and in the summertime with the Perfect Game Baseball League and the Valley Cats and everything else as much as it is about showing highlights of Mets games.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, they're kind of missing the script there a little bit because in a probably the pendulum will swing back the other way as we've seen the real draw of local broadcasting is local. It's not just, you know, reiterating what happened on a national scale because you can get that in so many other outlets. But if you're in Springfield or you're in Albany or a place like that, you want to see things that are local to you. That makes a difference. And, you know, you can sell that also.
You can. It's unfortunate that it seems to not be cycling back if you are a reader of what goes on in the media. You just saw that the largest radio company in America just cut hundreds of jobs,
right,
and are using, you know, one person at some studio somewhere to, as people in radio say, voice track, you know, for hundreds of radio stations.
Right.
So you have lost that. In Canada, just the other day, the largest media company in Canada, the one that owns the Maple Leafs and owns
Rogers, right?
Yeah, Rogers, and owns the Blue Jays and is making money hand over fist.
Mm-hmm.
Not only jettison staff, but shut radio stations off.
Right.
Just completely, you know, turn them off.
Yeah.
I don't know
if some of that is attributable to AI yet. I think that's coming in the broadcast industry, no doubt about it.
It is. It's interesting. I don't know how much radio you listen to in your car.
Mm. Other than WTBR.
Other than WTBR, because I know a lot of, you know, I don't have satellite in my car, so I listen to radio.
Mm-hmm.
And the liners for the iHeart stations, real people,
mm-hmm.
you know, real, you know. Mm. You know, so they're, you know, they're trying to make a point that they're not using AI as their disc jockeys.
Real humans, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think that they're missing the script. I really do. But, you know, there's a lot of big business involved with that when you talk about the largest company, and there are other ones throughout the country that have bought into, you know, decades ago, all these radio stations. They bought them all up like hungry, hungry hippos. You know, they just scooped them all up. And then they realized, you know, it's actually harder to make a profit on these things after all. So maybe we'll just cut all the jobs and we'll, you know, pare it all back and we'll just try and squeeze a nickel where we can. Well, and I think that's a huge difference between that and a place like WTBR, where you've got community voices and community radio. Really, it's a shoestring compared to some of these big stations. But we're doing what local broadcasting was always meant to do.
What's unfortunate is, and I see it in the, we've seen it in the newspaper business, and we have now been 10 years under local ownership, so things have kind of righted our ship. But the problem isn't so much that, you know, whether or not stations, newspapers, and all make tons of money or not. It's just that a larger and larger percentage of them are being sucked up and purchased by companies that have shareholders to deal with.
No doubt.
And it's the idea of having to make more, you know, make more of a return for the people who have invested their money, and people like you and me, if we were working at such facilities, would be in the crosshairs over that.
Yeah.
It's less about, to me, it feels like it's less about whether or not these places are making, you know, because I suspect that most of them are breaking even or in the black slightly.
But with huge debt loads. Right?
With huge debt loads.
That's really what the big problem is.
With huge debt loads and having to pay the shareholders their money back.
Right, right. Yep, it's an interesting business model, but I'll stick with community radio personally. Morning Drive here, speaking of which, on WTBR Pittsfield Community Radio. Howard Herman, my guest here this morning on the show. And let's talk about World Cup fever, Howard. It's gripping the nation. We are now into the quarterfinals of the World Cup. I assume you're watching games, and I think there are lots of people throughout the country that are finding themselves watching these soccer, football games here in the country and kind of getting turned on and like, hey, this is kind of cool. I like this.
It is, and I will counter that argument, and I agree that people are watching and paying attention. But it's like when people watch and pay attention to the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
This is a huge event,
yep.
And the soccer, football, whatever you want to say, there have been some really, really wonderful games to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you know, I think American sports fans who are not soccer fans are infatuated and are excited about this because it's nation versus nation.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone in America really care, other than the people who are actively involved and who have actively fans, with swimming? Mm. Other than in the Olympics every 4 years, you know, we know everything.
Right.
Alpine skiing. As much as I enjoy it, you know, watching it like during a year, American sports fans writ large get all Michaela Schifrin'd up during the Olympics. And I think it's the nation versus nation part of it. You do not.
I think there's a story building element there also. I think the Olympics and NBC and the other media giants that are, you know, sort of bringing you the Olympics as an event are also leaning heavily on the human interest stories behind the events. It's not so much who gets the best time or best score or whatever. They build it up to be who is this personality? Where did they come from? Well, you know, what do they mean to their country? I mean, there's a lot of story building there.
And Fox is doing some of that during the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But if this were, you know, a tournament with professional teams from, you know, from England, from, you know, just like whoever they are, Paris Saint-Germain against, you know, would not draw the same, I don't believe, would draw the same eyeballs that this does, country versus country. And I've always, you know, there's always been a conversation during the Winter Olympics because hockey draws such huge numbers during the Olympics.
Sure.
Is this going to turn all of America into hockey fans?
It does briefly.
But the ratings for the National Hockey League, while they have been really good, do not equal what you get there. So I don't think that the two, I've long felt that the two don't necessarily translate.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, you know, I think by and large, the coverage on the Fox network has been spectacular. Much like the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Fox does not control its cameras at games. It's an international feed.
Mm.
So if you're watching the game in France or if you're watching the game in Ireland, you're getting the same exact pictures that FIFA is providing that the Fox network is showing in the United States. The only real differences are on some of the replays and the commentating teams.
Yeah, you certainly see the FIFA logo flip in and out when they do a replay and something like that. So you know it's not necessarily a Fox decision that's coming through with that, which is interesting, right? So it is a worldwide coverage.
It's a worldwide feed, just like the Olympics are a worldwide feed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the NBC has its cameras there to do ancillary things, as does Fox.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's been entertaining. It's been, most of them have been okay to watch. Some of them have been, some of the games have been really spectacular to watch, and some of, you know, and I don't know, maybe it's me, but it feels like, you know, it's a more important game when there's a British guy doing the broadcasting.
Gives it a little gravitas, right?
And you know, maybe, and that just might be me.
Yeah. So do you see a long-term boost for soccer in the U.S.? Do you see a long-term boost for the men's national team in particular? The women's national team traditionally has been very strong, but the men have struggled to break through.
The men have sort of struggled to break through. The men, when they lost the other day to Belgium, I think pre-World Cup was 7th in the world, and the U.S. was 17th. So it feels like they both finished where they were supposed to finish.
Yeah.
Here's the difference. The men are playing catch-up because the men's programs around the world have decades of a head start.
Yeah.
Women's programs are catching up to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Credit Title IX.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Which is why the U.S. women's soccer team has been so far ahead of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Why they had dominated for decades? Because, you know, the women are playing in college.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting this opportunity that women's teams around the world didn't have.
Right.
There is women's soccer all over the world. Mm-hmm. There has been.
Yep.
But it's played at a much. It has been played in the past at a much lower level. Now it's played, you know, now the rest of the world is catching up with the Americans. It's the same thing, you know, it's not the same thing in, you know, in ice hockey where, you know, it's the U.S. and it's Canada.
Yeah.
And everybody else is just kind of playing intramurals. But
It probably takes a generation to bring that forward, right? Like I think of, you say, Title IX, and that was, you know, in the 1970 time period or so, and here we are 55 years later, and it certainly has made a huge difference. Soccer was not a big sport to play in the United States, let's say, in the 50s, 60s. It only maybe started gaining some momentum maybe in the 70s, and I think of Pele, you know, and the sort of the world awareness of soccer as it started to come to the United States. At what point does, you know, the younger generation of sports kids coming up through the ranks, so they're going to prioritize soccer, and therefore it comes through into, like, let's say, the Olympics or the World Cup, something like that?
I don't know if they ever are in that same degree.
Yeah,
because unlike most European nations, mm-hmm. who do play other sports, soccer is number one.
Absolutely. In most every country. Right?
In the United States, football, American football, is far and away, you know, is a number one participation sport. Basketball and baseball are close behind.
Mm-hmm.
So that therein lies the problem for soccer. You know, they're just, well, there are tons of kids in the United States, and more of them are playing soccer all the time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been reports that more families, more moms don't want their kids to learn and play American football early on. So that could have an impact.
Okay, yeah, and I completely understand that. But if you've been watching the World Cup, you get hurt. You know, it's just as bad as football, as American football. The thing about American football, at least you're padded.
Yeah.
You know, you're not padded, you know, in world football.
Soccer, you're getting a lot more cleats.
Cleats
to the leg.
And heads, flying through the air. Mm-hmm. There's no protection. But I think, you know, more kids are around the country playing soccer.
Mm-hmm.
The question that American soccer leaders are trying to figure out is, what's the best way to develop these young athletes into world-class soccer players? I don't think they've figured it out yet, because, you know, you look at it and you say, you know, is the best way to do it to have, you know, 14-year-old kids not play in high school and go off to academies and learn how to play? Is the best way to have kids play high school and then college soccer and then move up into the professionals? I don't know if there's a real consensus on how you build the program up from the grassroots.
Hmm. Yeah, that'll be something they'll have to figure out going forward. Other sports certainly have those pathways already built in, right? You know, you certainly go to prep schools if you're going to be going to Division I football, right? In a lot of ways, that's worked out. Basketball, there are certain pathways for that. Baseball as well.
Yeah. You know, the traditional high school / prep school, college, professional is the system that works for those other sports.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they figured it out, you know, if the powers that be in U.S. soccer want the college model to be the same.
Mm.
Because the difference is, you know, by the time the young men get out of college to play professionally, they're a little older.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't know.
Howard Herman is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, talking about soccer in the U.S. and World Cup fever that we have here now that we're in the quarterfinals. Those quarterfinals are set. There's a game today at 4 p.m., as a matter of fact. France versus Morocco is the first of the ones that we'll be seeing. Then we've got Spain versus Belgium, Norway versus England, and Switzerland versus Argentina. Out of those games, who do you see emerging to go to the semifinals, Howard?
Boy, I don't know. I don't know. The one thing that I have believed in other sports is, historically, the teams with the best player kind of wins.
Mm.
And Haaland for Norway has been the best player. Mm. You know, he's the best striker in the world.
Mm.
Those are the guys who play up front and score goals. He has, you know, he's a star with Manchester City in the English Premier League. And those two goals he scored the other day when they were behind, you know, just awesome. Awesome goal. But
so England's going to have a hard time beating Norway.
England going to have a difficult task, but England also has one of those guys in Harry Kane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody that saw the England versus Mexico game, and that was a very exciting game. And I'm not a big soccer fan in general. I sat and watched that entire game, and I was transfixed. I really was.
That might have been the most exciting game of the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, and not just because of the play on the pitch or the field, however you want to describe it, but it was also, you know, the fact that they were actually playing at Azteca Stadium in Mexico City, and that place was nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, coming in there and winning, when was the last time? I think they said Mexico generally doesn't lose in that stadium.
No, they don't generally lose in that stadium, and it was just, you know, and as the tournament gets farther and farther along, the reactions that you see from players on both sides are either heartwarming or heartbreaking.
Mm.
The game the other day when Egypt lost, Egyptians were in, you know, in tears.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's another
very emotional.
And that's another really good. That was another really good side because they have another guy. I think the league, the professional league, that other than the American Major League Soccer that most people are familiar with is the English Premier League because it's on TV every weekend on NBC and USA Network, and it's probably the easiest of the foreign leagues to access.
Yeah.
You know, I think ESPN has contracts with the German Bundesliga and the Italian League, and I think somebody else shows Spanish league games, but Mo Salah, who's the number one player for Egypt, you know, was a Liverpool guy for a decade or two, and everybody, of course, in New England knows Liverpool because they're owned by Fenway Sports Group,
right?
And the complaint is always that they're spending too much money on Liverpool and not enough on the Red Sox. But
well, there's certainly enough outlets to watch, and it is growing, right? I think even a decade or two ago, if we would have said, well, do you watch the English Premier League games? Most people would say, what? I don't know. Where are those on? I have no idea. You know, what are the teams? And maybe the teams wouldn't be a household name. And I think some of them are now, and people are familiar with them. And, you know, if you want to find it, you can.
Very much so. You know, you walk around, you know, you go to games, soccer, you know, you go to high school games and stuff, and little kids are running around. I see kids in, you know, in varying shirts. I see, you know, their kids are wearing Argentina shirts with Messi's name on the back.
Right.
Nobody yet is wearing a Messi Miami shirt because I don't think anybody's ready to buy pink shirts yet because that's one of the colors that, you know, and that team is owned by soccer legend David Beckham in the States, the Major League Soccer team. But
it's interesting the kind of cross-pollination going on where the American Football League is now promoting more international games, right? They want to have every single weekend have a game somewhere, either in London or in Germany or, you know, somewhere else. And they're really trying to push the idea of American football outside of the borders. Obviously, soccer coming here and being, you know, warmly embraced. we were watching the other day, darts. I think that's the next one. I think that's the next big league that's coming to the U.S.
And then, over there, by the way, really big. And then Americans can export axe throwing, you know, which is sort of like darts on steroids.
Yeah. The American version of throwing darts, yes. Would be axe throwing. Perfect. No, we. It's amazing how gripping that is, and you know, it's something anyone can play in a bar.
Not necessarily well. We had a dartboard in our basement, in my house growing up, and I can count. You know, I lost count of the number of holes in the wall.
I think we should bring back lawn darts. Do you remember those? The jarts?
No, I don't think.
The ones with the really big, long metal tips?
Oh, the ones that were banned because people got hurt.
Yes.
Yeah.
We played with those all the time when I was a kid. Nobody ever got hurt badly.
Of course, that's the operative word, badly.
Yeah. I bring them back. Howard Herman's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll see. Do you have a team that you would pick to win it all at the World Cup out of those eight?
I don't.
Is Argentina that strong?
Argentina is probably the best team.
Yeah.
Messi is undoubtedly a legend.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of it, I have seen in the last couple of games that I've watched, some incredibly athletic, spectacularly good saves by goalkeepers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much like, and I don't mean to compare it to hockey per se, but it's the same game in the sense that a goalkeeper can steal a victory.
Yeah.
And, you see it in hockey all the time. When a goalie makes, 50 saves, on 52 shots and they win the game.
Right.
And the same thing can happen in this. I would expect Argentina to be in a final. But gosh, if the Norwegian goalie, who was incredible, makes a bunch of saves, they could win.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see.
And, of course, we'll talk about other sports in the second half of the show. Here we're going to come up to the top of the hour break. And it is sort of the same game in a lot of ways. Hockey, anything where you've got two teams and we've got two goals and you're trying to put the thing in the goal, right? And baseball, always different because baseball, the defense, holds the ball.
But
very different.
But much like soccer, where goalies can control things,
mm-hmm.
Baseball has pitchers, and they control everything.
Right. The defense. That's what makes baseball special. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show with Howard Herman here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. We'll be back right after this short break.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio. 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield. 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
Hello, we are the George B. Crane Memorial Center. We provide a clean, comfortable, and safe place for those seeking support for addictions. Our facility offers 12-step peer support recovery groups and opportunities for those in recovery. We are located at 81 Linden Street in Pittsfield. Our schedule and contact information are on our website, thegbcmc.org. We are here to help you.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Larry Cracker here on WTBR, and I want to tell you about my show, Nothing But Old 45s. I have an absolute blast playing my records here on WTBR for 2 hours every Monday morning, and I'll crank out the best of top 40 oldies and classic rock Mondays here on WTBR, the home of Nothing But Old 45 since 2014. Nothing But Old 45s, Mondays from 10 a.m. until noon, here on 89.7 WTBR-FM for the love of radio.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu and from Sontrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts, retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available online at Sontrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to the program, Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, your local radio station, as a matter of fact, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge on the PCTV Select app. And also on cable channel 1301 Access Pittsfield. Thanks for joining us this morning. Howard Herman, my guest on the show, Hall of Fame sports reporter for the Berkshire Eagle. I'm going to keep saying it, Howard. And we will be back to that conversation in just a moment. But first, let's get to our weather forecast from the National Weather Service and see what we have in store for us today.
Berkshire Weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area, rest of tonight, mostly clear. Near steady temperature in the lower 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny. Hot with highs in the upper 80s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly cloudy. Scattered showers in the evening. Humid with lows in the lower 60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 30%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And it is a nice day out there right now. I say get out, enjoy it. For July 9th, it's not going to get any better than this. So, you know, take advantage of it when you can. All right, Morning Drive returns here, 89.7 WTBR-FM. And Howard Herman, thanks again for joining us this morning. Glad to have you here.
Always good to get up and come in and see your smiling face.
At an ungodly hour for a sports reporter that has a deadline at 11 o'clock at night.
We were talking about local in the break, but yeah. when I was in local radio, my alarm went off at 3:30 every morning.
Ooh, that's tough.
Because I was the morning drive news anchor
right.
at WBRK.
Yeah.
So I was up every morning, you know, get up, I'd shower, stop at police headquarters and see what happened news-wise overnight. I would stop at Dunk's and get coffee and breakfast and go to 100 North Street up the second floor and work until noon.
Yeah, it's a different schedule, isn't it, when you're doing that? I mean, even coming in here in the morning for 7:30 seems early to me, but it's really not compared to someone who's doing a newscast at, let's say, 4:30 or 5 in the morning.
And the funny thing is, I loved doing that shift because the best part of it was I was done. I got up, I went right in, I was done.
Yep.
Nowadays, and even at other radio jobs I had where I was I was on an afternoon drive, I get up, I'm home all day, and then I have to go to work. You know. And
then after you get out of work, you're still keyed up.
Yeah, right? It was fun because, you know, I like getting up. I didn't like getting up early, but I like the fact that, you know, I go right in, I do my job, I go home, my day is done.
I think that's a definition of a morning person. I think you either are or you're not. I've always been a late night person, so it's antithetical to me to be up real early. But now it's burned into my head. I think it's just the way it's going to be now.
Yeah, and I've discovered that, like, when my kids were little, I would get up with them.
Sure.
And now,
kids will do
and
that
now
too,
they're
though.
Both in their 30s, and I still get up early, even when I'm not coming in here to visit with you.
Right. It definitely burns it in, doesn't it? So let's talk baseball for a minute. We're coming up to the All-Star break, right? We got that coming up next week already.
A week from 2 days ago.
Isn't that amazing? Wow.
And we are, by the way, it's only unofficially the halfway point of the season. I believe we've already passed the official halfway point of the season because I think everybody's played more than 81 games.
Okay.
Or most people have played more than 81 games, depending on the weather.
So traditionally, we think of it as sort of the midway point of the baseball season. Are things going with this major league season the way you thought they were going to play out? Were there any surprises so far?
Define surprises. I think, you know, you can't really say what's happened in Boston's surprising.
No.
Because people get hurt.
Yep.
And I just saw, I guess I read yesterday that there are big sluggers out. He pulled up lame.
Who's that?
Contreras. Contreras has pulled up lame, so he may or may not be available for the All-Star game.
Oh, boy.
Which he was, you know, a late late addition to.
Mm-hmm. Every team gets at least one person to the All-Star, right?
And it's also, I have no
problem. Even if they're a terrible team, they get one player.
I have no problem with that.
Mm.
I don't, you know, the All-Star game doesn't mean as much anymore. When I was a kid, probably when you were a kid, I think the worst thing in that sense that's happened to Major League Baseball, and I don't mind it per se, is interleague play.
Mm.
Because interleague play has made the All-Star game irrelevant.
Because you've already seen these teams play against each other.
And yeah, and
there's no big surprise anymore.
I remember when I was growing up watching baseball. I grew up in a National League town.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know who, I had never seen Mickey Mantle play or Yastrzemski or any of those guys play. The only time you see them is in the World Series and the All-Star game.
Right.
And you're rooting for your league to beat them.
Yeah.
You know, nowadays, you know, it's an exhibition and nobody cares. In those days, you know, some guys would play all nine innings.
Sure.
Because it was an All-Star, and some guys didn't get the play.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm okay with I'm okay if they did that now.
Yeah.
You know, if some guys don't have to play, but everybody has to play because why are they coming?
Yeah.
And I've seen games where All-Star games where guys actually leave the ballpark before the game is over,
yeah,
because they're going to get on their little private plane or whatever, or drive back to where they're from, if it's nearby, and there's no the legendary play of Pete Rose running over Ray Fosse in the All-Star game and blowing up Ray Fosse's shoulder, is legendary, but you don't get that anymore because. You know, because it's strictly an exhibition game, but it is still the best All-Star game of all of them.
At least it's not the Pro Bowl, right?
It is basically baseball.
It's still fun.
That's
what it's supposed to be fun, right?
But it is played the way they play the game in August.
Mm.
It's still, you know, I mean, you're not going to get guys, you know, breaking up double plays like you do in a regular season game.
Mm-hmm.
But the game, you know, even when they played the Pro Bowl, the real Pro Bowl, nobody hit anybody hard. The NBA, nobody plays defense in the All-Star game.
Right.
The NHL All-Star game isn't even the NHL All-Star game anymore. Now it's like a 3-on-3 tournament.
Mm-hmm.
The baseball All-Star game is the only game that is faithful to its real game.
Mm. And it's still, I think it's still an event. It's still fun. The home run derby is kind of a nice addition also. You got to fill up a day there somewhere. And then I think the day after the All-Star game is traditionally one of the quietest days for all of sports.
It is the quietest day because there's nothing going on. It's the day that ESPN does the ESPYs,
right.
You know, to fill a little bit of time.
Yeah.
All-Star week is fun. If you're covering it, I remember I was at the All-Star game in Boston, and everything starts.
That was what, 1999?
1999. Everything starts Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
They have the Futures game, which is arguably the best part of the All-Star game because you'll see some of the best prospects in all of baseball.
Hmm.
Play a 7-inning game. And I remember the one in 1999, A.J. Burnett, who had pitched 2 years earlier for the Pittsfield Mets and helped them win the New York Penn League Championship, was pitching.
Hmm.
By then, he had been traded to Florida in the Mike Piazza trade with the Mets. and but we had a chance to talk and reminisce and all that. And then after that, you have the, you know, celebrity softball game, which then was a big deal.
Yeah.
Nowadays, there are no celebrities. There are a lot of influencers and stuff. But I can remember walking through the Red Sox locker room after the celebrity softball game. Over there is Kevin Costner. Over there is Matt Damon. I think Mark Harmon was there because he was, I think, still doing St. Elsewhere.
Okay.
His pre NCIS era.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. 1999 happened to be the year of the 100th anniversary, the 100th anniversary team.
Right.
And I can and my favorite story on that was I get to Fenway early on All-Star Day, and they're doing tours. They always do tours of Fenway Park, which are kind of fun, and if you've never done one, you should go.
Yeah, I agree.
You should go. Mm-hmm. Depending on when the season is, you can't go everywhere.
Right.
Because we went one year, took my son was going to high school out there, and we went. It was in between the ALCS and World Series, and you can't go in a locker room. But if you go in December, you can go to the locker room and see what the Red Sox locker room looks like.
My last tour, I got a chance to see where you sit up in the press box. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. Although at the All-Star game, I sat out in right field, which is where the auxiliary press box always is. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, I run into a friend of mine who was doing tours, and we were talking about it and said, yeah, this is nothing. You know, it's the All-Star game. Mm. This is my job. Me, you know, doing interviews with the 100th anniversary team, that was my childhood. because there's Harmon Killebrew, Brooks Robinson, Hank Aaron was there, you know, all these guys.
That was the year Ted Williams was there.
Yeah, but right? he wasn't at that thing in the morning.
Okay.
But Ted Williams at night was just off the charts.
Yeah.
And what Pedro Martinez did in those first two innings, you know, boom, 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 strikeout, strikeout, strikeout. You know, McGuire goes down, and I think a couple of McGuire's home run balls from the home run derby are still traveling. they might have cleared the parking lot and ended up on the turnpike.
So Howard Herman, when we get to this time of the year in baseball, and we've got the sort of midpoint and the All-Star game, we start also talking about the trading deadline, which happens in early August. And then we start to evaluate the teams and we say, okay, which teams are going to be sellers this year? Which teams are going to be buyers? And you start to hear all kinds of rumors about what players your team could lose. And the ones that I was looking at from the Red Sox, our big closing pitcher is
Aroldis Chapman.
Aroldis Chapman is right up there on the list. He's probably in the top five of all of the trade rumors. Does the Red Sox deal Chapman to somebody going down the stretch, or do we keep him and try and move up the ranks ourselves?
Boy, Craig Breslow has the toughest job in baseball, trying to decide whether he's a buyer or a seller or a stand patter at the trade deadline. Mm. When you look at it, I was talking to Roger Weiland on his radio show the other day, and we were talking about that. There are only like 4.5-5 games out of the wild card.
Yeah.
And they've been doing this with a bunch of injuries. I mean, you know, arguably Garrett Crochet is one of the best pitchers in the American League, and he hasn't pitched in a while. He's been hurt.
Since what, April or May?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, their starting rotation's been outstanding, even without him. Sonny Gray's been off the charts good, and he's a guy who's been mentioned as possibly if they choose to break everything up.
Yeah.
He's got to make a really hard decision. Does he think if they get everybody back, they can make a playoff push? Since, you know, with the expanded playoffs, it's easier to get in.
And the Red Sox have made a move recently, too. They're not in the bottom of the American League East anymore. They're in number four spot, just barely.
And they're there. And I think if I remember my stat, you know, and things might have changed since Monday, but they were in the neighborhood of 4 to 5 games out of the wild card.
Yeah.
And that's not a lot.
No. 12 games out of first place right now. Looks like the Rays are holding that down over
that
the
doesn't,
Yankees.
That's not
5 games over the Yankees for the Rays. Not bad.
That doesn't matter a whole lot because, you know, with the extra wild card teams, you know, all you got to do is get in the playoffs.
Sure.
And if they get in the playoffs, they can do damage. So I'm glad that I'm not Craig Breslow because I got to think that he's going through a lot of sleepless nights trying to figure this all out.
So if he decides not to sell, who does he pick up to make that run?
That's an interesting question. If you get a Crochet back, that's the equivalent of a trade because he hasn't pitched.
Mm-hmm.
They get a couple guys back from injury who they had injured, and if they perform, it's the equivalent of an average trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what they're going to do. People all over social media are saying they should just blow it up and start over again. But
do they trade?
They're not the Kansas City Royals. They're not out of anything.
Yeah. They don't deal a Jaron Duran though, right?
Ooh. I would consider it.
Yikes.
I think what I have long believed is that the easiest guys to trade are outfielders because you can always find another good one. There are more outfielders laying around. The two hardest things to find, in my opinion, in baseball, other than great pitchers, if you're talking about guys in the field, are franchise catchers.
Yep, that was my
and
first
franchise
thought, too.
Shortstops.
Yep.
Everybody else. You can find a bunch of.
Hmm.
Catchers
end up being captains a lot of times, too.
But, which is the one thing the Red Sox do not have.
They don't?
Is a franchise shortstop and or a franchise catcher.
Hmm.
It's why I feel like, and I've said this to other people, and I believe this, it wasn't so much that they traded Mookie Betts several years ago to the Dodgers. Hmm.
Although that didn't work out too well
that,
for them.
Which is the point.
Yeah.
It's not that you traded him. It's that Connor Wong is the best thing you got back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not much.
Yeah.
He's a guy.
Yeah.
I like to say he's a guy. And he's an okay major league player.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't trade a potential Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say that he's a sure thing.
Mm-hmm.
He likely is, but, you know, if he doesn't play another game, maybe, you know, his longevity doesn't quite get him there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not as much that they traded him. It's like you didn't get anything for you. You know, even the trade they got.
And people are still sour on
Alex
that trade
Verdugo
too, right?
was on paper the best player they received back.
Yeah.
And he was a pretty good player.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great player. If you're trading a guy like that, you better get, you know, a team's top prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute top prospects in a deal like that.
Yeah.
And because they included the David Price contract, probably a mistake.
Mm.
they didn't get as much in the way of, you know, minor league guys or major league star-ready players as they might have from an organization in the Dodgers that might be the best organization top to bottom in baseball.
Mm.
Because not only do they have, you know, scads of money to sign free agents, but they develop players as well as anybody in baseball.
Mm. Yeah, deep bench in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, they do it all. They do it all. They spend, you know, a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
not just on major league guys, but in development of players. And that's the bigger thing. It's like, you know, if you're going to trade a guy like that, or, you know, there was talk in the winter that the Pittsburgh Pirates were thinking about trading Paul Skeens because at some point they weren't going to be able to pay him and they might as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been okay, like if the Yankees had acquired him. But the Yankees had better given me Cam Schlitter, George Lombard Jr., Spencer Jones, and maybe their top four prospects and a major leaguer. But, you know, don't give me guys, don't give me your number 7, 9, and 11 prospects for arguably one of the best pitchers in baseball. No, don't do, you can't do that. And I think that's what the Red Sox ended up doing in that trade.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see who is a buyer and who is a seller as it comes down. Certainly the Dodgers having the best record right now in Major League Baseball.
And I'm not sure what the Dodgers need, so I don't know.
They don't need anything, right?
No.
Yeah. So they won't be probably a buyer or a seller.
I'm sure they will be a buyer.
Yeah,
because they're the Dodgers, and that's kind of what they, you know. And Andrew Friedman is arguably the best executive in baseball. Mm-hmm. The two best organizations in baseball at opposite ends of the payroll scale are the Dodgers and Tampa Bay and the Rays. Mm-hmm. The Rays are an amazing, absolutely astonishing organization. Hmm. They have one of the lowest payrolls every year,
right?
And all they do is contend. Hmm. And right now, you know, they're threatening to run away in the AL East.
Yeah, they're at 54-36 right now, top of the American League East, five games above the Yankees. Pretty amazing, actually. Let's tie this back to Wacona Park, Howard Herman, while we're here in the last 5 minutes or so of the show. And recently there was a bench-clearing brawl involving the Nationals and the Boston Red Sox that involved a pitcher who pitched here at Wacona Park 9 years ago.
Yes, Cade Cavalli. He didn't actually...
We have that on film.
We do. I was there. And Cade Cavalli is the young fella's name. The irony of that is when he played for the Pittsfield Suns, he really didn't pitch. Mm. He was, he played the field and hit more than he pitched.
Yeah.
I think, if I remember correctly, because I talked to him a week ago Monday, which was the night
before. Did you really?
I had gone into Fenway to see him.
Yeah. And he...
It was the night before.
When he was here...
He threw.
When he was here at Wacona Park, he was playing for Brockton, right?
No, he was playing for Pittsfield. He was playing for the Suns.
Okay.
He was here with one of the Hughes boys, Hal Hughes, who he had gone to high school with, and was here for most of the summer, and still remembers fondly the 4th of July parade. and seeing, because he said to me, yeah, in Oklahoma, we just all get together with family and we shoot off fireworks in the backyard and have a barbecue. there's no parades or anything like that. But I had talked to him and wrote about him the night before that happened. Then I watched that game that night, and he was spectacular on the mound.
Mm-hmm.
I think he struck out 13 guys, career high. Mm. Red Sox couldn't hit him with a bed slab, as the cliche is.
He was obviously pumped, right?
A good frame of mind, it looked like. Mm. And then there was a little bit of a choice of words going back and forth that Wilson Contreras took offense to.
Yep.
And we had our typical baseball brawl, a little pushing and shoving and some profanity, and guys got thrown out.
Yeah.
He didn't get thrown out, but he did get suspended for 7 days, which has been lowered to 5.
Hmm.
And Contreras, I don't know if he's appealed, and I don't know if there's been a decision. I didn't see a decision on his appeal yet.
But what was interesting, though, is that we were going back through the tape here that we had recorded for PCTV that night, and he threw a total of 2 pitches here at Wacona Park in that particular game, and a bench-clearing brawl broke out that night.
Yeah, he hit a guy.
Well.
He hit a guy and took a and the hitter
it
took
like
offense.
Looks like he hit his bat.
Yeah, but the hitter took offense.
Yeah.
It went out, and it became a typical baseball fight where nobody throws a punch.
Yeah.
But my feeling on what happened on Tuesday night was, if Contreras does not throw his helmet.
Hmm.
Nobody gets thrown out of that game. Because that's what, they were in each other's face yelling. that happens more than you know. But when he throws the helmet, and he had been ejected the night before for allegedly, questioning whether, questioning a check swing and tapping his helmet, and looked like the umpire thought he was being shown up from the game before. But I thought it was overall an overreaction by Major League Baseball with 7-game suspensions.
Yeah, that's pretty stiff.
Which, although, a 7-game suspension for a pitcher is no big deal. It's one start.
Well, yeah,
although it is 7 days of, no salary. Which people don't think about.
Still stings a little bit.
It stings, yeah. but for a hitter, 7 days is a lot,
Yeah. Gets you right out of the swing. Howard Herman, believe it or not, we are out of time. It's been great having you here this morning. As always, we'll bring you back and talk more about it as the baseball season moves on. Maybe when the NFL starts up, we'll have you back.
We will be waiting with bated breath. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And enjoy, everybody, this beautiful summer day out there, as I will. And we'll see you again tomorrow morning here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Take care, everybody.